Today's guest on Full Circle is Emma Anderson, who was a member of the seminal indie pop band Lush and is currently recording with Lisa O'Neill in ethereal pop outfit Sing Sing. I went to Emma's house in Cricklewood to talk about her career and, in particular, one of her earliest recordings submitted to the Full Circle programme entitled Sunbathing.
There's a track called Sunbathing, which probably was the first song I ever wrote, first complete song I ever wrote, lyrics and everything. And when Lush did their first ever demo, and we had a different singer called Meryl, that was the last track on that demo. And it was the only track that ever made it onto a Lush record, actually. It ended up being the B-side of Sweetness and Light.
Did you just pick up the guitar and learn it? Was it taught at school or anything like that?
When I went to do my A-levels, I had about four lessons, guitar lessons, but it was like classical guitar. And the first few lessons were just learning chords. And then he started going into all the sort of picking and arpeggio, you know, the sort of Spanish classical method. And I thought, actually, I don't need to know this. So I stopped and did the chords were enough for my purposes. I mainly am self-taught, yeah.
Well, how did you actually all meet up, Lush? Because you've actually been in different bands beforehand.
Well, I'd been in a band called the Rover Girls, which was just, it was kind of a joke. It was more like cabaret, actually, than a rock band or an indie band. It was very sort of 50s garagey. We did a lot of covers. We did like these boots that are made for walking and Folsom Prison. And we had a few of our own compositions, but actually I didn't write at all for that band. I just played the bass. But myself and Mickey had known each other for years, even before that. you know, we were really into music and going to see bands and stuff, and we always thought, oh, we'll be in a band together. So we've actually, when the Rover Girls was going, and she was in another band at the same time, funny enough, a kind of 50s garagey thing as well, we were kind of trying to get our own thing together, knowing that the two bands we were in were not really what we wanted to do. So,
from the start, you wanted to get together and write stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we started off, we used to play in my kitchen when I lived in West Ealing. And I probably did have some songs early and something in there, but I would not know what they were. They were just so rough.
Well, the song Sunbathing, you mentioned there's a different vocalist. When did Mickey decide to take over and become a vocalist?
We played quite a few gigs with Meryl as a singer, and we've like five piece at the time, obviously. And she kind of just started not being able to come to rehearsals, and she had other priorities and this, that, the other, and it kind of wasn't working. So, you know, we said to her, look, we want to kind of take this a step further, and you don't seem to be able to commit, and, you know, she was like, okay, yeah. So then we thought, well, we'll audition. So we put an ad in the Melody Maker, and it was a nightmare. You know, we had about three sessions where all these people were turning up, and it was just insane. Most of them, I think they were just so unsuitable, and they probably just answered any ad in the Melody Maker for vocalists, you know. And we went to the pub afterwards, and I just said to Mickey, you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to, you know, because she'd been doing the backing vocals up to one. I said, you're going to have to do it. We can't keep this audition thing just a joke. So she did.
You didn't feel like singing yourself?
I'm not really a singer, to be honest. I don't enjoy singing. I don't mind doing backing vocals. But, she'd been doing the backing vocals and I'd been silent, so she shifted up to the lead vocal and I took on the backing vocal.
Were things beginning to take shape around that time when Mickey took over then, did you think?
Funnily enough, when she took over, things did start changing, as in the songwriting changed for some reason, I don't know. It started suddenly getting a lot better, and we started writing the songs that ended up being on the Lush records, actually. And we started writing, you know, Thought Forms and Ethereal and Baby Talk. And
so we were constructing these demos together and what do you talk, hawking them around labels the way most bands would do?
Well, yeah, the first demo we did, which I mentioned earlier, or the one that had Sunbathing on, all we did with that was try and get gigs, which we did. We played at the Falcon all the time. But then after we started writing these kind of better songs, we thought we should do another demo. And we did, and it was only two songs, actually. And those ones we sent to labels. And that got quite a bit of interest. And 4AD was one of the labels that gave us a call.
I read this funny tale about how you got your manager for 4AD.
Well, what happened was, he was the plugger there, the radio promotions guy. And actually, he'd seen us play, even though I think before we sent the demo in. And we were pretty rough when we played live, you know, we were very nervous. And even though the songs were there, we were very rough on the edges. And I think at the time it was when the Sundays were, you know, kind of getting a lot of hype and quite a lot of girl bands. There were quite a lot of sort of girl-fronted bands who probably were actually a bit more proficient than us. And Ivo was the head of 4AD, got our demo, really liked the songs. But he had Howard, the plugger at the time, going, I've seen this band, they're absolutely rubbish, you can't sign them. And I was going, but actually I quite like this. And he's going, no, don't do it. But Ivo was obviously quite taken with the demo, so he called us up and said, look, I really like the demo, but there are other people here that, you know, have a say in the way this label's run. And I kind of have to sometimes, you know, be a bit diplomatic and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he said, what I want to do is put you in the studio to record three more songs. So this he did. So we went into the studio and we did Baby Talk, Thought Forms and Scarlet, it would have been, yeah. So we went and did these, and really quickly, they were demos, you know, for the label, and he loved them, absolutely loved them. But still, I think he had Howard going, no, they're rubbish, don't believe it. but maybe slightly softening a bit, and he said, no, I'm sorry. And so basically he said, look, what I want to do is I want to put you in and to do three more songs, and we'll put that out as a mini album. So we went back and did the two that had been on the original demo, which was Second Sight and Ethereal, and then we did Bitter as well. that those six songs became Scar, which was our first record on 4AD. And then Howard sort of gradually was obviously kind of softening that. And I think he actually liked us as people a lot. And then the next thing we did was, I said, oh, well, I'd actually met Robin Guthrie before. And he said, oh, well, Robin is interested in working for you. So we went back in the studio and did Deluxe, reworked Thought Forms and did Leaves Me Cold and Down, which became the Mad Love EP. And Deluxe got a lot of attention and press, and people loved it, etc. So, and I think Howard by this time was like, actually, they're all quite good. They just need to get better live and da-da-da-da-da. And then by the time we did Sweetness and Light, Howard was like, I love you guys. And he left 4AD to become our manager.
So, you know, you've got those CDs there.
Mm.
Do you want to go through a few?
Well, Deluxe is still one of my favourites, I think. So I remember writing that one because I was working in a sandwich bar at the time as a sort of holiday job when I was a student. And we had to make the sandwiches and then sell them to the customers. And I remember I was making them, and this little melody came in my head. I was like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I was thinking, that's quite good, actually. I've got to remember it. I was trying to keep remembering it because I didn't have, like, a little, you know, little recorder or anything, or mobile at the time where I could record into. And I was sitting on the tube and got home, got the guitar, and I taped it. And that became Deluxe.
Were those a set of complete songs when you went into the studio, or did you...
With Robin or with anybody?
Well, with anybody, really.
Yeah, they pretty much were, actually. Yeah, we did work like that. And they were actually pretty much complete. I mean, I wrote songs and Mickey wrote songs, and I wrote every bit of my song and she wrote every bit of her song. Bass, backing, vocals, everything. And they were, so they were pretty actually much complete before they even went to Chris and Steve or Chris and Phil to play in a rehearsal room. We weren't a jamming band at all. I don't think I've ever jammed in my life, to be honest.
You have your own songs and Mickey brings her own songs. Is it, do you kind of play them to each other and you can say, oh, I don't like that one, and
no.
You just play the others?
To say, basically, all we used to do is we had our sort of Porter Studios, and I was not very good with a Porter Studio, actually. And Mickey was quite good, and mine were very, I'd do a very basic drum pattern, but put all the parts down, the bass, the backing vocal, both guitars, and everything, and we'd just swap, and they learn that.
Did you ever write with Mickey at all?
No, the only time you might ever see Anderson and Bereni is when I wrote the music, and I said to her she could write the lyrics, so basically I'd give her the music and the melody, and she had to put the words to that. But no, we never sat in a room together. Apart from when the time in the kitchen, pre-Lush. That was probably the only time we wrote together.
So it never appealed to you to collaborate in that way?
No, I think it worked pretty well as it, you know, the way it was, actually.
How about the first album, then? Spooky.
Spooky?
Yeah, this is when you had to go ahead from Howard and everything was
better.
And
everything was, we had a five-year contract, etc., etc., five album contract, I should say. Yeah, it was a difficult album to make, but the songs, I mean, I wrote Nothing Natural, Tiny Smiles, I wrote the music, Super Blast, Fantasy, Laura and Monochrome, I wrote. Laura, I think, is my favourite track on this album.
Warmly received album.
There was a bit of a backlash started. This came out kind of during the time of Nirvana and Suede, and people were getting a bit sick of this sort of fey shoegazing, as they called it, you know, and there were a couple of quite harsh reviews. But it's still, like, it went at number 8 in the charts, and For Love was our first top 40 single, and we started doing well in America, actually.
Was it about the time of the Lollapalooza tour?
Yeah, then we were asked to do Lollapalooza, and then that would have been a part of promoting this album, yeah.
It's quite a strange, rather innocuous lineup of bands for that song, isn't it? It was yourselves and the fellow British...
Mary Jane.
Charities, Mary
Jane. Yeah.
And then you had, was it Soundgarden? And
Soundgarden, Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, Ministry, and Ice Cube.
So very, very kind
we
of grungy and heavy.
You wouldn't believe how petrified we were before. We were like, everyone is just going to hate us. That we're going to be getting bottles thrown at us. Everyone's going to be going, you know, F off limeys and, you know. And it was absolutely the opposite. It was brilliant. It was great fun. In America, it's not quite the same attitude over here. People don't see these compartments as much as British audiences. I mean, we couldn't play with Soundgarden and Pearl Jam in Britain, but over there we could.
Hmm.
You know, and people loved it. And most of the venues were seated, so we come on at like 2 p.m, it was pretty empty, which was fine, you know. And then Pearl Jam, there was a weird lineup because we were on first, then it was Pearl Jam, because I think when they booked the tour, Pearl Jam hadn't become big. And then suddenly they became huge, but they still like, no, we're going to stay at our original slot actually, which is at 3 p.m. So it was us, Pearl Jam, then the Mary Chain, and then the kind of the rest of them. And I think it was probably good for us because people were getting there early to see Pearl Jam. But then when the Mary Chain came in after Pearl Jam, it kind of emptied a bit, which was a bit of a shame for them.
And you borrowed people from other bands as well, did you?
Yeah, it became
together.
It became a bit of an on-tour theme. Like everyone was like, "Hey, who should we play with today?" You know, we had Matt from Soundgarden played drums with us. A song, and then we'd play on stage with Ministry, we'd play guitar, me and Mickey, and do backing vocals, and the Mary Chain, and it all, by the end of the tour, everyone was like on stage with everybody else. Very relaxed atmosphere. It was great, I really liked it. Met some really good people I'm still in touch with.
When did you decide to, right, this is it, we're going to do the second album?
Split was a funny album, because a lot of people look back on that album and say it's their favourite Lush album. At the time, it didn't get very good reviews. I think just because it was like Blur and Elastica and Supergrass, and do you know what I mean? It was.
But it was just released in at the wrong time because of the Britpop explosion.
Kind of. I don't know. I mean, the first single off it was Hypocrite, which was one of Mickey's, which was a little bit more punky and whatever, probably fitted more in with the Britpop thing. We did this two singles on one day. And I think everyone thought, oh, Hypocrite will maybe go in the top 40. And Desire Lines, it's 8 minutes long, the radio's not going to play it, will go in at number 80 or something, you know. And actually what happened was Hypocrite went in at number 50 and Desire Lines went in at number 53 or something.
What happened then after that? There's two albums behind you then, the advent of Britpop.
Mm.
Did you decide to go to America and?
Well, for Split, we toured a lot, and again in America a lot. We toured in America more than anywhere. We actually only did a very small tour in Britain for Split, and that was it. And then we came back, and then it was kind of this crisis. It was like, even though the album's done, yeah. To be honest, by today's standard, the album probably had done okay, but. At the time, I think people saw it, it's Pulp and Blur and Elastica and all these bands are now doing, you know, British guitar music is really getting in the charts, and we were kind of on the outside of this. And it's like, how are we going to play this now? What are we going to do? And we, started writing for the third album, which was Love Life.
Did you consciously want to steer away from Split or to write something different, or did you,
I think it was something that wasn't discussed, actually. I think people had this vision that we all sat down and went, we've got to write more Britpop or something, you know. And we didn't. We went away and we wrote the songs. They were a bit more upbeat and more concise, sort of pop songs, more direct, straight to the point. And maybe because that's what was kind of around at the time, you know. We were being influenced by that.
Did you enjoy recording Love Life?
Yeah, I did. And we did. And funny enough, what we did with this one was, you know, after working with Robin Guthrie and then Mike Hedges and Alan Moulder and all these names that people had heard of, we were like, let's just do it with Uptown Man. And we did. It was mixed by Sean Slade and Paul Caldery, who'd done something like Radiohead and some other people. But no, it was pretty easy because we did it with Pete. It was much more recording the band live. There wasn't any jiggery pokery going on.
Did you feel more in control because you didn't have a big name producer this time?
Yeah, and then we had Terry Edwards played on a couple of tracks. That's and right. We were sort of bringing in people. You know, it was a lot more. I just make a phone call and someone can come down, and do you know what I mean? And I suppose maybe we felt a bit less pressurised, I don't know. And it became our best-selling album.
Because the songs are more accessible, do you think?
Yeah, you? And at the time, you know, it was, well, it was slightly post, but it came out in 96, but, you know, we got radio play. Radio 1 played all three singles, and that was new for us, actually, you know. Being a taxi and Radio 1 was on and you'd hear 500 and that'd be, finally we're getting on the radio.
Well, you did, and afterwards Lush was, you know,
behind you. Did you think, I just want to take a big break from music?
I didn't want to form another band, you know, with a guitar, and then do all the touring. You know, I just, I don't want to do that again. I want to do something. I still want to make records. I still want to write songs. And I met Lisa, and she'd been working with Mark Van Hoen, this producer. He was a programmer, actually, more than a producer. You know, he was a kind of studio whiz kid. And we went in the studio with him and did some of my songs and some of her songs, and it all kind of came together really well. The funny thing about this album is, the first album, Joy of Sing Sing, is that some of the songs were written before we even met each other. And then we went in the studio with Mark and it all kind of came together very well, considering, you know, we didn't even know each other when we'd written them. But funny enough, going back to what you were saying about me and Mickey, Lisa and I did collaborate a little bit on some of these songs. Like, I wrote parts for I'll Be, and Tegan, we collaborated on a bit as well. And I wrote, you know, guitar bits for her song. She wrote backing vocals for my song. So we collaborated a lot more than myself and Mickey did.
Did you find that kind of interesting?
Yeah, I did. Approach? It was good, actually. It was really good. At first I was like, oh, I've never done this before. And she was like, how about this backing vocal? And I was like, write your backing vocal for my song? And I was like, oh, no, that's really good. I wouldn't have thought of that. And it was good. The whole process was good. It was just me, Mark and Lisa in his little studio. And a computer. So obviously from working with Lush, where there was a drummer and a bass player and there's all these people around, this was a very new experience for me. I'm just doing it all programmed.
Do you prefer that?
It's much easier. There's new albums done like that, more or less, as well.
Is this with Mark as well?
Mark as well, yeah. It's just computers, you can just change things so quickly, you can take things out, you can copy and paste them, you can, you know, and that's not devaluing the music in any way at all. It's just a different way of working. And
do you have a personal favourite on there, or
on the first album?
Yeah.
Tegan, I think's great.
Hopefully in July.
Yes. Once we get these mixes done, like, we can actually set a date, I think.
Is it all self-financed?
It's all being funded by sales from the EP.
Will this be available directly from your website?
Yes.
Which is?
sing-sing.co.uk. And we're just, like, really redoing the shop now, so we can take credit cards and all this sort of stuff.
Just ask you about the Full Circle thing. I know that you haven't recorded it
yeah.
yet. Rather than saying, what was it like for you to come Full Circle? Well, the question I would have to ask you is, what would it be like for you to come Full Circle and re-record something that you've done
well,
a long
I tend
time
to
ago?
Do it with Mark, so probably sound more like what I'm doing now, really, which would be quite an interesting proposition, I think, you know. Something I wrote in 1988, getting put into a computer and fiddled about with.
Emma will now come Full Circle with her song Sunbathing, performed by Sing Sing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emma Anderson.